it'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our roundtable discussion on officiating, and we have a full house with the crew from Football Zebras. I'm Ben Ostro. We have Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Chris Soibert, and Pat Weber. So we have a couple of topics that came up, and oddly, we're seeing them come up in both college and the NFL. So this seemed to be something to address. We did touch on this a little bit in our last podcast, our last episode, where we were talking about simulated substitutions and different things, managing that sideline, managing the communication from the sideline. But one of the tactics that's starting to come about, and it was addressed to all the teams, Walt Anderson, the liaison to communicating from the league office to the teams, he puts out a tape every week, sends it to all the teams. And one of the items on there was, do not slow walk your substitutions on defense. So if the play clock is running and you have the offense make any substitution, the defense has that opportunity to match up. And we went through the mechanics, but basically for those who didn't see, it's basically the referee is in charge of determining how long that substitution period stays open. The umpire will stand over the ball to make sure that there's no snap. So we're looking at situations where if the substitution period's kept open longer, now there's no time left on the play clock and whether or not the defense is gaming that situation. So Walt Anderson says to all of the teams, be aware that officials are being told, the referees are being told to close out that substitution period if you're not removing yourself from the field or even the exchange, even the oncoming substitute. If you're not doing this with any kind of speed, then we're going to close out that substitution period and you're going to have 12, 13 players on the field. And we're also seeing that this is becoming more of a tactic, maybe more deliberate in college as well. So let me toss that out to you. And I guess I'll start with you, Pat, because you're working, in the college level. Give us a little bit of a sense as to what you've been seeing.
Yeah, last year especially, and especially on the D1 level, it became very evident that defenses were taking every advantage they could anytime the offense would sub. And to the point of they would wait as long as they could to match up and start sending their subs out, and they would slowly walk on while the players there were replacing would slowly trot to the sideline and getting a lot of cheap delay game fouls on the offense. And, this year, I think they want referees to, there's definitely been concerted effort that if the defense isn't doing their job, we're not going to allow them to get that advantage. On the D3 side, we don't see defenses match up as often, so it's not as big of a deal in the games that I work. But I know there was the bowl game between University of Illinois and South Carolina last year where Coach Bilema and Coach Beamer, nearly came to blows because one side is abusing the tactic over and over.
That was one of the most intense football games I have ever seen in person. And yes, Illinois was taking its time, slow walking off and slow walking on. South Carolina was late substituting. They wouldn't substitute, 10 seconds, or with, 30 seconds on the play clock. They would substitute with under 20 seconds on the play clock. Illinois was slow walking, and Coach Beamer was doing cartwheels on the sideline at the slow walk, and he was forced to take a timeout, and Coach Bilema looked like the cat that ate the canary on those. Watch that Citrus Bowl, and you'll see a prime example of what these rules are trying to prevent, or at least what Walt Anderson's message to all 32 teams are trying to prevent. It's and again, it's a judgment call. I mean, you know, one referee may say 5 seconds is sufficient. Another referee may say 15 seconds is sufficient. Do they want to put it down in black and white? And that's yet another thing the officials have to keep straight in between downs.
Interestingly, on Steve Strimling's review tape for this week, it was Illinois again that had the problem with delaying their defensive substitution, slow walking one of their players, and actually one of them actually ran off pretty quickly. But clearly it kind of shows that Illinois is doing direct things to impact the progression of the offense by slow walking their defensive substitutions. And Steve brought up a couple thoughts of, you know, can we maybe modify it in the off season where players, as we're closer to the goal lines on each end and outside of the team boxes, can they just run perpendicular to the sideline and immediately get off versus angling and crossing the neutral zone, essentially. But ultimately, they want to get the substitutions handled quickly because they don't want to throw flags for too many men on the field in either event. So there's going to be a lot of work this offseason to make sure they can figure out a solution for this problem, because, it, as Pat said, this is not only on the NFL level, but also the college level as well.
And just to let our audience know, we're talking about a video that is distributed to several officials at various levels. It's goodness, we have no idea how many people are on the list there, but it's generally distributed by Mike Pereira, Dean Blandino, and Steve Strimling, who's in the Big Ten now. He also has done work with the spring league, so he does work with the Fox crews as well. So and that's one of these videos that gets shared far and wide amongst officials, and so that was the example that we saw there. As far as what Mark said about, you know, do you set a certain time? Cam, I kind of want to get a sense from, you know, you being on the field. I would sense that there's more of a rhythm of the game. So if you were to put a time limit on something, it just is not going to be a one size fits all. You know when things are not fitting a specific, you know when things are not hitting a specific rhythm. And when something's off like that, then that's when your antenna goes up.
Yeah, before you even said it, I was just thinking of the term, the flow of the game. You want to make sure the flow of the game is going, the pace of play, you want to make sure it's going at an appropriate pace. To be able to say, you know, we're going to set a, you know, hard set 5 seconds or 3 seconds, I just don't, you got to be able to look at it from a subjective standpoint. A lot of things in officiating are very objective, but there's also a lot of subjectivity as well. And I feel like this falls into that category. At the same time, though, you need to make sure that these substitutions, again, if the defense is given the opportunity to match up when the offense substitutes, that's, you're slowing down the flow of the game in order to not have a competitive advantage for the offense. So if the defense wants to abuse that, I mean, it's on them, and that kind of makes sense. Now, if we translate this over, we've been talking about the college game. If we translate over to what we've been seeing in the NFL game over the past few weeks, the video that was sent out that Walt Anderson had put together and sent out, there was a play a few weeks ago by Green Bay where it was kind of the opposite. The an offensive player for Green Bay took a couple steps onto the field and then went back to the sideline. And then from there, you know, that constitutes a substitution. And I wanted to bring that up because it also happened again last night in Buffalo. Buffalo did the same thing about midway through the first quarter. I remember it sticks out of my head because they showed a replay of Sean Hockley getting in to do that iron cross signal right as the snap was happening. And he was pretty much standing between Josh Allen and the center right after the snap took place, shotgun snap. So again, it's something you kind of have to manage, and just like everything else in officiating, obviously, but to be able to say, yeah, we're going to set a time for this, I don't know if that would work in the long run, because then you could talk about, you know, potentially over officiating it, turning a subjective thing objective, I think just may open a can of worms for stuff we don't want.
And really it's on one end, it's trying to sow some confusion on the defense, you know, so whether it's a simulated substitution and, you know, it's debatable. I mean, in the situation of the Packers, it could have been deliberate. It probably was more of a mistake. But even on the tape, Walt Anderson was telling all the teams, doesn't matter if this is an error, it's still a substitution. It opens up that substitution period. If you snap that ball quickly, if you think that you're going to catch the defense and that umpire can't get in there fast enough, and the way it was shown from the overhead, it was one of the deep wings that spotted the substitution, the simulated substitution, because it was out of the view of the short wing. So that was being communicated. And in that period of time, they're already trying to do a quick snap. So it was not enough time to get the umpire in there. So we just, at the NFL, they just consider that, you know, a warning. There's, you know, they'll kill the snap, and, you know, there's no play, and it's a warning. The second time that happens, it's a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct. Now that warning resets every game. So theoretically you get a pass every game. And that was one of the things that we did have a rule in that was, simulated substitutions where a player comes all the way out to the huddle and then withdraws either coach's decision or a deliberate tactic. And that was enforced a little too heavy. It was 15 yards right off the bat. And so they kind of eased it back. Maybe we would see that start to be enforced a little heavier, but again, to your point, we're seeing these things, and you point out, you know, just because it was on the tape last week, it still showed up in the game this week. So we're going to be seeing that even if it is a mistake, it will be, you know, an open period for the defense to substitute, because it is opening up an advantage for the offense and a disadvantage, more of a disadvantage to the defense. So we also were looking at one of the other situations that we had a post last week where the Titans were looking to kick a field goal, and they had their offense on the field after a pair of timeouts by both teams. So now we know we're going to have a snap on this down after that. And the Titans had their offensive package out on the field, and pretty much when you have a 25 on the play clock, they're going to go for a clean restart. So they're going to say, look, get all of your substitutes out. We're going to get, everything's going to be, it's not going to be that 40 to 25 period. So we're just going to start 25 and do a clean restart. What wound up happening is the Titans decided to swap out and bring out their field goal unit. But in this case, we had already had a clean restart. And so they're looking for that clock to be pumped back up, and they're not getting that from the referee. And, you know, we don't see this at home, but, you know, later on we get more information on this. And this is, again, one of the things that was given to the teams that, you know, you can't be doing some of these, you know, little gamesmanship things. And, you know, we're going to be on top of these things. And in Carl Cheffer's crew situation, no matter how much they were being frantically lobbied to bump up that play clock, they left it right where it was.
Yeah. That play specifically, you know, we talk about trick plays. You got to be perfect. You're not getting any benefit of the doubt. They may not be a full on trick play, but they are definitely trying to game something to get an advantage. So you Carl Cheffer's crew is absolutely correct. You can't give them a reset just because they want to play games.
And on a more general sense as well, this obviously showed up in, or likely showed up in, the training tape. Obviously, this was communicated to the teams, but it goes to show the preparation involved during the week where, you know, you're reviewing that training tape, and then when something comes up that following week, you know you're going to be on top of it. I go back to the Sunday night game last night where Sean Hockley's crew had this situation in Buffalo. it feels really good when you know you prepared that previous week, you watched your training tape, and then the antennas go up right away because you think, oh, I just saw this in the training tape on Tuesday or Wednesday. Preparation is key, and I think that that was really an aspect there. Sean is one of the most prepared referees in the league. My local association had him speak to us a couple weeks ago, and just the way that he described his preparation is unbelievable. So I know that he was probably reviewing that tape, getting together with the crew, and sure enough, it popped up in the game, and that's when you know you're on the ball. That's when you know your preparation is top tier.
That's one of the most satisfying feelings when you prepare for a game and you as a crew go in saying, okay, let's watch out for this situation or watch out for this illegal tactic that they might happen. And then in the middle of the game, well, I'll be darned, there it is. And it's just a real cool feeling to know that you prepared for that and your crew rose up to the challenge and met the challenge when it presented itself.
We've had a few things that have arisen in our coverage on Sunday where the last line of the entry says, this was on the tape that was distributed to teams. So now that's that extra layer to it where, you know, now the league is giving each of the teams a weekly tape going over, here's what's legal, here's what's not legal, and, you know, giving it broken down by unit, by offense, defense, special teams. And that way, you know, they can just coach to the unit like, okay, these are the things you got to be aware of, because they just told us that's what they're looking for and the things that they're on top of. So the officials are preparing for that. You need to prepare for it. And so it is enhanced coaching at the NFL level quite a bit. I mean, like all the teams seem to be very satisfied with the new direction under Vice President Ramon George, Vice President of Officiating, and his openness and transparency with the teams. And, you know, they're getting a lot of information that, you know, assists them in when you assist the teams, you've also assisted the officials, because now, you know, you're calling a cleaner game. Let me switch gears. In the time we have left, we're going to look at two situations where there was no flag for defensive pass interference, except if you looked on social media. That's where most of the flags were thrown. There were two situations, end of game. We had the Eagles trying to mount a comeback at the end of the game. So right before their Hail Mary, so the next to last play, saw a lot of action, and we didn't see a flag. And a lot of hand-wringing on that one. Mark actually wrote a post on that call specifically and said it was a good no call. We go to the Sunday night game. We also had the Bills on their fourth down play where they were falling up short. And then, you know, there was some contact. Now, again, we could set a freeze frame and show that it's that the contact was early, but yet there was no flag.
The one in Philadelphia, when I first saw it, I thought, uh-oh. And I thought initially that it was pass interference, but then I looked in slow motion and what elements were there of pass interference? The defender had good position. The defender did not play through the receiver to try and defend the ball. Both were looking for the ball. And again, the defender was in superior position. The defender does not have to give way to let the receiver come back and try and catch an underthrown ball. There was no material restriction. All this in slow motion led me to conclude that my initial thought was wrong, and this was a great no call by side judge Clay Reynard.
When it comes to defensive backs, I mean, they have to have the opportunity to play the ball as well, right? I mean, like you said, Mark, he was in superior position. He was looking back for the ball, which doesn't give the defensive back, you know, authority to do everything, but it usually gives the defensive back then a benefit of the doubt, where if they're trying to play the ball, usually a flag does not come unless there's some other egregious sort of, again, restriction, armbar, whatnot. And again, I agree with you. I think looking at it initially, you know, because there are a lot of flags where sometimes you go, there really wasn't much there. And this one looked like there was initially. But again, if you don't see it in slow motion, you certainly can't throw it in live action. And that's what they did.
And it goes to show the quality of officiating at the NFL level. If we're saying, oh, you know, we may have been when we saw it at game speed, we see the slow motion and, you know, actually it doesn't meet the criteria. It's not enough. It doesn't rise to the level of a foul. You may see a still image posted online later where it's like, oh, he's clearly early. Well, the thing is, at the end of the day, we don't officiate to freeze frames. We don't officiate to slow motion. We got to do it at game speed. And it just speaks to the quality of officiating that we have to be able to let the play out, not be, you know, don't anticipate a foul, let a play complete itself, and then take action from there if you need to. And in these two instances, I agree. You hear the concept of bang, bang all the time. And that kind of applies more to the Buffalo game, more so than the Philadelphia game. But these are two no longer undefeated teams. And there's no more now. Champagne bottles are popping in Miami last night. But this is, you know, really something that speaks to the quality of officiating the NFL, especially when you hear a lot on social media saying quite the opposite. Yeah, but like I said, you don't officiate the freeze frames. You don't officiate the slow motion. Mike Pereira once said you have 1/26th of a second to make a decision. And to be able to get it 98%+ correct is really commendable.
Yeah, and on top of that, you know, just because there's contact, it doesn't always rise to the level of a foul. And if we're going to make it a foul, the official always needs to be able to put it in one of the buckets. You know, for pass interference, you have early contact, not playing the ball, grab and restrict, playing through the back, things like that. And if the defender's in superior position and is playing the ball, you're probably not going to be able to put it in one of the buckets, and you don't have a foul.
And that's one of the things when we were initially looking at the Eagles-Broncos play, you know, whether or not there was sufficient contact by the Broncos. It's our starting point is what bucket does it go into? And you just keep eliminating these buckets and it's like there's nothing left. And, you know, you then have to look very closely and see, you know, is there something that's hidden? Is there, you know, is there a tug of the jersey? I mean, I've had people saying there's a tug of the jersey. It's not there. And we did check. We did do a double check. And, you know, our sources are saying that both calls are upheld and will be graded correct, that they were correct, good, no calls. Gutsy calls at the end of the game. Let me, with the few minutes that we have left, you know, just a couple of quick thoughts on, you know, these big calls, yeah, they're amplified by the situation of the game, but the situation of the game also amplifies the play. So we do wind up with these really intense calls right at the end of the game. So just, you know, put us on the field with, you know, this ball in the air and this game on the line. In this case, both situations are teams that are losing their undefeated status. And, you know, here we are fourth down and that ball is in the air and we got to make a call.
First thought that goes through your mind is, oh boy, here it comes. And then you just focus in and don't listen to the crowd. Tune the crowd out and rely on your training, rely on your instincts, and know in the back of your mind that whatever call you make, half the people watching are going to lose their mind and think you are the dumbest person that has ever lived, let alone officiated a ball game. That goes through your mind, but you have to immediately drive it out of your mind. And then you have to rely on your training and your experience and your instinct to make the right call.
And with that, we wrap up another episode of the First and 25 podcast. I'm Ben Ostro. We have Mark Schultz, Cam Philippe, Chris Soiber, and Pat Weber. We'll catch you next time on our podcast.